Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. Professional scientists probably rank higher in honesty and in integrity in the eyes of most Americans than almost any other professional. After all, these men and women are scientists, and everyone knows that scientists have no axes to grind. Their only interest in science is the discovery of truth with a capital T. Men and women of science have no hidden agenda. They are merely searching for the mysteries of the universe, whatever they happen to be. If their discoveries run counter to long-held beliefs and opinions, scientists are willing to change when new evidence is presented. Is that your view of science and scientists? As a rule, our confidence in scientists is so great that when they speak on topics outside their particular discipline, we tend to accept their judgments as if they came from Mount Sinai. For example, if a man has an earned doctorate in biology, we are often very much impressed with his pronouncements on theology, or philosophy, or politics. A given scientist may know nothing, or practically nothing, about subjects outside his discipline. But because he is a highly respected scientist, his words become law and gospel. Carl Sagan is a good example of a man who is nationally known for his knowledge of astronomy and who thinks he knows about all there is to know in other fields, but who is very ignorant on moral and spiritual issues. A great number of Americans have great admiration for Dr. Sagan because he is a scientist, but do not know that experts in the field of astronomy think of Dr. Sagan as a popularizer, not a reputable scientist. Yet because Carl Sagan has a legitimate doctorate in astronomy, he is considered to be an expert in other areas. To quote the words of Joseph Fletcher, "Carl Sagan has the political, philosophical, and theological sophistication of a guinea pig." Our respect and reverence for scientists probably stem to a great extent from the spectacular work many scientists have done in the past 50 or so years. Technological advances in my lifetime almost defy the imagination. Television, supersonic travel, space exploration, medical advances, and hundreds of other accomplishments. To the average man, these inventions and discoveries seem almost miraculous. How can we avoid standing in awe of men and women who have done so much in such a short time? I'm not ungrateful for those inventions and discoveries which have made our lives more comfortable. Air conditioning, safe automobiles, refrigerators, dishwashers, computers, and such like. But all of these scientific advances must be taken in a realistic light. We must not place too much faith in science and in scientists. Scientists, whether biological, geological, or otherwise, are men and women with the same temptations, the same weaknesses, and the same ambitions which characterize the rest of the human family. Some scientists are desperately searching for some new discovery or fact which will make them famous and perhaps even immortal. They would like for their names to go down in history books alongside Louis Pasteur, Sir Francis Bacon, James Watson, Francis Crick, Joseph Lister, and Jonas Salk. Am I implying that some scientists would actually fudge a little on their experiments or discoveries in order to prove their greatness? Would they skew the results of their research in order to prove that their own theories and prejudices are correct? It is my considered judgment that the majority of scientists would not be unfair or dishonest for any reason. But there are some who have been dishonest, and probably some will be in the future. Tragically, the training some scientists receive in American colleges and universities leads them in the direction of fraud and deception. their education, especially in the biological sciences, may actually prejudice them in such a way that they may not be able to understand some truths. Actually, no one, scientist or otherwise, is completely free from bias. All of us, including scientists, must make a concerted effort not to allow our prejudices to prevent our seeing the truth when it is presented to us. Frauds have been perpetrated by scientists in all academic disciplines: chemistry, biology, anthropology, sociology, psychology, and theology. But I am concentrating today on scientific frauds which were designed to establish evolution. I am calling our study Evolutionary Fraud. Please listen with an open mind and call or write if you have questions or comments. Although evolutionary theories of man's origin have been around for thousands of years, defining evolution is not an easy task. One of the reasons evolution is so difficult to define is because there are so many different theories of evolution: organic, theistic, emergent, saltatory, and others. Negatively, evolution does not mean just change, although obviously change is involved in all theories of evolution. Everyone who has his eyes open knows that changes take place in the world of living organisms. All living creatures experience some change on a regular basis. Many kinds of sheep, cattle, hogs, dogs, and cats have undergone enormous changes in the past several hundred years. The changes I am describing are generally called microevolution, as opposed to macroevolution. Microevolution refers to small changes which occur in plants and in animals. Macroevolution says, in effect, that one animal became a different kind of animal over a long period of time. Macroevolution is what most people have in mind when they speak of the theory of evolution. Actually, the word microevolution ought not to be used at all, since it is confusing in the minds of many people. Small changes do occur within various kinds of animals, as almost all people freely admit. But a bird does not become a dog, nor a fish a bird. One of the very best books available on evolution was written by Dr. John Klotz, professor of natural science, Concordia Senior College, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Klotz's book has the title Genes, Genesis, and Evolution, and was published in 1972 by Concordia Publishing House of St. Louis, Missouri. Dr. Klotz gives the following definition of evolution. It is the concept that non-living materials became alive through natural processes by chance alone. That all things now alive are descended from a single or a very few initially living organisms. And that man himself is the product of a process of chance development over millions of years from non-human ancestors. Page 9. I have two questions I need to ask before we examine some cases of evolutionary fraud. What are the implications for moral and spiritual values if the evolutionary hypothesis is true? How does one explain the popularity of the evolutionary theory? The truthfulness of the theory of evolution is not a matter of indifference. Its implications for every phase of life are serious. I want to list five of those implications. Evolution involves a complete repudiation of the Scriptures as God's inspired Word. It denies the creation account as revealed in Genesis. It robs life of meaning. What ultimate meaning could life have if we have ascended from the animals? Evolution destroys the basis of all moral values. I'm aware of Anthony Flew's book, Evolutionary Ethics, but the title is self-contradictory. evolution removes any ultimate responsibility for our actions, and hence cancels any possibility of judgment. You may destroy a dog for killing a child, but you do not believe the dog is morally culpable. There are probably other implications of the evolutionary theory, but these are adequate for our purposes today. My other question is, how does one explain the popularity of the evolutionary hypothesis? Our educational system must share much of the blame for evolution's popularity. Since virtually all references to God and to Christianity have been legally removed from our public school, evolution is the number one explanation for the origin of the universe and of man. Children's television programs dealing with the origin of man and of the animals almost always glorify the evolutionary theory. Sometimes that fact is obscured by a mass of meaningless or deliberately deceptive language. But evolution permeates many children's television programs. In the public schools and on television, children as young as 5 or 6 are introduced to evolution and made to believe that it is a valid explanation of our origin and development. From elementary school through the university, evolution becomes religious dogma. A student's grades may suffer if he does not accept the theory of evolution. A teacher who dares deny or question the theory of evolution probably will not be granted tenure and may be fired for questioning accepted scientific or philosophical orthodoxy. In fact, one professor at the University of Iowa demanded that his university revoke the degrees of all students who believe in biblical creationism. If you think the evolutionists are not serious about the God of evolution, you need to do some investigation on your own. There are numerous good books which explain what evolution is, how important it is for many science, philosophy, and theology departments in our colleges and universities, and the penalties both students and teachers may have to pay when they object to evolution. I think you would be surprised. I hope you would be disappointed and disgusted. After all, your tax dollars pay for the promulgation of the evolutionary theory. There have actually been many attempts on the part of evolutionists to commit fraudulent acts in the support of their theory. I understand the seriousness of this charge, but there is absolutely no question about it. M. Bowden, an English scientist, wrote a book in 1977 with the title Ape Men, Fact or Fallacy. Bowden's book successfully exposes some of the fraudulent ideas being promoted by various evolutionists. He shows that a Frenchman by the name of Dubois concealed human skulls for 30 years. One of Dubois' supporters, Professor Ernest Haeckel, faked some scientific illustrations. Investigations have clearly shown that the Neanderthal men were true men and not missing links between men and the lower animals. Their strange appearances resulted from rickets and syphilis. They are not, in an evolutionary sense, the progenitors of modern men. Dr. Mary Leakey, from the famous family of anthropologists, discovered footprints which she said were 3,600,000 years old, but they were clearly human footprints. Dr. Bowden accuses the scientific establishment of deliberately suppressing the publication of unwelcome evidence on evolution. These are very serious charges, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, but they are true beyond the shadow of any doubt. Dr. Bowden says that fossil hunters often have a subconscious desire to fit their discoveries to their preconceptions, whether or not they are in line with current expert opinion. Bowden makes mention of a French author by the name of Prédan, who wrote the book Archaeological Frauds in 1925. Prédan accuses fossil hunters of using trickery in aid of their preconceived ideas. He does not, however, accuse the scientists of being dishonest. Page 2. I think Prydain is being very generous in refusing to call some of these fossil hunters deceptive and dishonest. When a scientist deliberately alters fossil remains or keeps them hidden from the scientific community, I would call that dishonesty. Do you remember from your high school or college days seeing a strange creature in your science textbook with the name Piltdown Man? Did you know that the Piltdown Man is one of the greatest hoaxes ever perpetrated in the name of science? Dr. J.S. Weiner's book, The Piltdown Forgery, gives a wealth of material on the Piltdown fraud. At the time of the publication of his book, 1955, Dr. Weiner was a reader in physical anthropology at Oxford University. Dr. Weiner was one of the scientists involved in the exposure of the Piltdown forgery. His book makes fascinating reading, even though he is an evolutionist. Please listen to these words from Dr. Weiner. On December the 18th, 1912, Arthur Smith Woodward and Charles Dawson announced to a great and expectant scientific audience the epoch-making discovery of a remote ancestral form of man, the Dawn Man, or the Piltdown Man. The discovery was hailed in the press and in the scientific community as a veritable confirmation of evolutionary theory. Page 1. The fossil was promptly named Eoanthropus Dawsoni in honor of the discoverer. Page 5. Sir Arthur Keith, the distinguished anthropologist and paleontologist, sang the praises of the Piltdown discovery. That we should discover such a race as Piltdown, sooner or later, has been an article of faith in the anthropologist's creed ever since Darwin. Page 6. I hope you took note of the expression, an article of faith in the anthropologist's creed. Does that tell you how badly the evolutionists wanted to find some confirmation of their faith in evolution? Does it provide some insight into why a scientist might fudge just a little on his searches for the missing link? W.J. Solis expressed the excitement of the scientific community when he wrote, "In Eoanthropus Dawsoni, we seem to have realized a creature which has already attained to human intelligence, but had not yet wholly lost its ancestral jaw and fighting teeth." Page 6. There is an enormous amount of material in Dr. Weiner's book which allows us to see how men who are determined to prove their evolutionary views will go to great lengths to alter and then to hide what they have done from those who have a right to know. But to make a long and discouraging story short, let me say very bluntly but very correctly, the Piltdown Man was a deliberate hoax. The only question which may never be answered completely is who the culprits were. We know Charles Dawson, the discoverer of the fossil, was involved. But who were his co-conspirators? No reputable scientist has implicated Smith Woodward. But many scientists believe that a Jesuit priest, Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, worked with Charles Dawson in deceiving the public and the scientists. Teilhard de Chardin was a staunch evolutionist who was determined to prove the theory of evolution. Dr. Weiner says that the creation of the composite ape man, the Piltdown, was evidently an elaborate affair. Much thought and work had gone into the preparation of the fraudulent jaw and in the provision of the other items of deception. Page 53. The objective evidence for the deception was overwhelming. The Piltdown men were forgeries. The tools were falsifications, and animal remains were planted. Page 78. Dr. Weiner was a staunch evolutionist and thinks the so-called missing links of which Charles Darwin spoke are no longer missing. He concludes his book with this observation: "Though today we are still far from an understanding of the many matters concerning man's origin. We are in no doubt about the reality of the transformation which has brought man from a simian status to his sapiens form and capability. Page 205. In other words, there is no doubt about our development from monkeys or other simians to our current status as human beings. Is there no doubt about our evolutionary development? Dozens and dozens of books by evolutionists have been published in the last 20 years, which raise serious questions about the truthfulness of organic evolution. Not one of these books, in my opinion, has been so totally devastating to the theory of evolution as a book called Evolution, A Theory in Crisis, written by Dr. Denton. Dr. Denton is an Australian physician and molecular biologist and an evolutionist. These words from Dr. Denton will have to suffice today. The evolutionary theory is a highly speculative idea for which there is no really hard scientific evidence. Ultimately, the Darwinian theory of evolution is no more nor less than the great cosmogenic myth of the 20th century. Page 358. Many other books by modern evolutionists come to the same conclusion. Let me ask you another very important question. Why would reputable scientists deliberately create and publicize a forgery? What could possibly be their motivation or motivations? I realize we are dealing with very touchy matters when we start talking about motives, but in many cases we have no choice. We need to know why men and women cheat, deceive, and lie, especially when there does not seem to be any financial rewards attached to their behavior. Dr. Weiner suggests two possible motives. First, there could have been the mad desire to assist the doctrine of human evolution by furnishing the requisite missing link. Page 118. From the time Charles Darwin announced his theory of organic evolution, many theologians vigorously challenged Darwin's so-called facts and conclusions. Those theologians have been reared to believe in divine creation and could not harmonize their beliefs in the Bible with Darwinism. They were a thorn in the sides of the evolutionists. If a prominent scientist could find the right kind of fossil, or if he could manufacture them, the war with the theologians would be over. That may have been Dawson's motivation. Second, there is the simple impulse of personal ambition, one not incompatible with the preceding motive. Page 118. Would a scientist really sacrifice his integrity to become famous for his discovery or his invention? If the forgery had gone undetected, Charles Dawson and his co-conspirators would have been elected to the Evolutionary Hall of Fame. Their names would have been emblazoned on the pages of every science textbook until the end of the world. There is no doubt that the desire for fame inspires some people to deceive and to cheat. But the name of Charles Dawson will live in infamy so long as men and women discuss the theory of evolution. The Bible, dear friends, is very explicit in its condemnation of deceit, dishonesty, and fraud. The great prophet Jeremiah wrote, "Your habitation is in the midst of deceit. Through deceit they refuse to know me, says the Lord. Their tongue is as an arrow shot out. It speaks deceit. One speaks peaceably to his neighbor with his mouth, but in his heart he lays in wait." Jeremiah 9, 6 and 8. Various persons came to John the Baptist, asking him how God wanted them to live. The publicans or tax gatherers asked John, "What shall we do?" He answered, "Exact no more than that which is appointed you." The soldiers wanted to know what they should do. John said, "Do no violence to any man, neither accuse any falsely, and be content with your wages." Luke 3:12-14. Obviously, one should be very careful of accusing others of fraud. But sometimes the evidence is so overwhelming, as in the Piltdown case, that no other conclusion can be justified. The Apostle Peter mentioned certain false teachers who were using feigned words, that is, false words, well-turned phrases, to make merchandise of God's people. 2 Peter 2:3. Peter severely criticized the false teachers by saying they were guilty of covetous practices and had forsaken the right way and gone astray following the way of Balaam the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. 2 Peter 2:14 and 15. Peter knew the false teachers were deceivers because of their deeds. Their words and their actions betrayed them. He knew them by their fruits. Matthew 7:15 through 20. I've talked with you today primarily about scientific fraud. But what about religious fraud? Are there religious teachers who deceive and cheat and lie? Tragically, there are men and women in all professions who are dishonest and who would commit almost any deed to gain power or money or prestige. One preacher, for example, wrote a book about the great miracles which occur in his healing campaigns. When he was confronted with some of his miraculous stories, he admitted that he had embellished some accounts of the miracle. Yet he is still on television, and his books sell by the hundreds of thousands. The truth is that most scientists would not deceive anyone for any reason. They are as honest as the day is long. But those who do deceive give science a bad name. Just as crooked lawyers give the legal profession a bad name, and crooked preachers give the church a bad name. I close today with these powerful words from the Roman letter. Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. Romans 12:17. We thank you for listening today. If you have questions or comments, please get in touch with me. Thank you, and may God bless you.